You're listening to Siren Radio, and it's another edition of Cultural Connections, in which we'll be featuring a Vice Chancellor, a Vice President, and a musical expert. And as ever, so many things to pack into the next 50 or so minutes. We'll go to our Vice Chancellor first. That, of course, is Professor Neil Juster, Vice Chancellor of the University of Lincoln, before you were Senior Vice Principal and Deputy Vice Chancellor at the University of Glasgow. Welcome to your first ever Cultural Connections, Neil.
Thank you very much, Alex. Good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you in place and ready for all sorts of other bits and pieces. Your first time in the Siren Studios, I gather.
It is the first time inside. I've watched from the outside, but first time inside.
Excellent. Well, also, we said one vice chancellor. We've got a vice president as well. That, of course, is the wonderful Rita Ugi. How are you, Rita?
I'm good, Alex. You know, when you say vice president, you make it feel like, you know, vice president of the country. No.
Well,
I love the intro. It was really good. You know, really good.
Vice president brackets international. So, you know, on that basis alone, you just clarify how you fit into that role as vice president international.
So, more from the student union, so they has to, in terms of student representation, so to represent the cluster and the demographic of students that we have right here on campus. So there's that. That's where there's that need to have a student leader that it's international, that cuts across, so that they more like represent all the students across from that who are international students on campus. So that's where I come in.
Exactly.
And I was voted into the position.
Of course, democracy rules when it comes to the University of Lincoln. And of course, our musical expert, guitarist extraordinaire, who's also got extensive experience in a whole range of aspects, that's Matthew Manzanek. How are you, Matthew?
Hello. Yeah, Matt Manzanek.
Manzanek, exactly.
Really happy to be here.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, we'll be exploring a number of key points from that point of view, but let's move into the music first and foremost. And Rita, your choice is up first, and I gather this is something that you want to connect with respect to a whole variety of African music. So would you like to share with us what we're about to hear?
Okay, so this music is from highly celebrated artist from Africa, and he's just recently been off and now he's back on, and his music has really brought in so much joy and light to everyone who listens to across the continent, not just across the continent but globally as well. And he's had like nominated Grammy awards and all of that, so he's quite big in the international setting. And also this song got the most highest streamed number in less than 2 weeks from on Apple Music, as well as but Apple Music and Spotify got the highest stream music ever from an African artist in less than 2 days. And there's a nice dance challenge to that song as well, which, you know,
it's just hold fire at the present.
But it's a good music to sing along to, and it's more of, this is the song where, you know, it's called Unavailable, and it means like when you have people who are coming in with negative vibes or anything, you're like, you know, I'm not available for all that kind of talk. If it's time of you want to go on a holiday and you're like, you know, I'm going to leave everything about work and just spend me time, and you don't want people too much noise from everywhere, you're telling them, I'm unavailable, please just leave, let me be so I can have a good time for myself, you know. So this is just like coming off from the holiday, this is like the best song that we've been playing, and it's a good trend, so I was like, you know.
Initiating Rage Process.
I'm unavailable.
toe-tappingly wonderful, and indeed other parts of the anatomy as well, which indeed Rita was attempting to actually demonstrate to all of us there in terms of the techniques we should use. Rita, Nigeria, again, cross-cultural connections there. Would you like to just briefly explain the significance of that link that we've just heard?
In terms of the cross-culture and the cultural connections with that, because there's English involved in there, and then there's the Nigerian, because the artist is from a place called Yoruba region in Nigeria, and that's a different language that they speak entirely. And there's also something called Pidgin English in there. So Pidgin is like a commonly spoken language in Nigeria, not just in Nigeria, in Ghana as well as different places in Africa. So it's more like broken English, but it's something that we kind of use in most of the things that we communicate with each other across, whether in music or in speaking languages, it's easily understood across Africa. So that's why that's a multicultural
clearly,
song.
Clearly, Rita, the world awaits the TikTok video with Professor Neil Juster doing some actions to the joys of Unavailable. And you know, it will storm the world, Neil.
It's going to be viral.
Yeah. Let's move to a slightly more serious topic for the first aspect of the programme, Cultural Connections, which is the current higher educational landscape for the 21st century. Neil, I've attended a couple of your village hall talks and varieties there, and I know you have a lot of passion in terms of your own particular background as an engineer, as a scientist and so on, and of course with the work you did in transforming the University of Glasgow from that point of view. If we were asking you to, as we are, think ahead over the next 4 or 5 years, that 2027 line is coming through there. Do you think that we'll have an unrecognizable higher educational environment? Will the ecosphere have changed drastically, or is it a case of we need to be equipping people to be adept at change and have that ability to pivot fairly regularly, as indeed we just did during the pandemic?
I think by 2027, the HE landscape will have changed, but it won't have changed so much you don't recognize it. I think that HE systems tend to take a long time to change fundamentally. But that's not saying there won't be change. We're seeing the advent of AI now in learning technology. Never has it been so easy to find information and so much information. The challenge I think students have now is, what is the right information? What's this information actually telling me? How do I interpret it? And I think we'll see the way in which we teach in the classroom, particularly to undergraduates, that will evolve over the next few years. Looking back in 2027, will be a bit different, but I think if you go to 2047, I think we'll look very different.
Yeah. I mean, we are, of course, only a matter of 4 years away from 2027, and I'm still shocked with the fact that couple of years from now, it'll be 100 years since Metropolis actually took the world by storm in 2026. I wasn't around at the time, just in case people were thinking. Matthew, let's turn to you, good sir, because you had, again, quite an interesting route to Lincoln, including, as I say, a considerable period of time within Ireland, I believe, as far as the Royal Irish Academy of Music is concerned. So share with us your path to the wonderful University of Lincoln.
Yeah, I mean, I was born in New York State, and then I moved to Ireland to do my PhD, and so that was actually a kind of, interesting introduction to higher education in the kind of UK-Irish system, which is quite different from the US system, and so that was kind of its own learning curve. It's almost, in some ways, it's barely recognizable, you know what I mean? And I think to kind of go on what Neil was saying, like AI has changed things so much that I feel like we're actually going to be stressing some of those most like crucial elements of education, which is like assessing sources, really interrogating some of those ideas and being able to figure out what is the correct information, what information can I assimilate? And that was something that I found there's a quite unique way of doing that as you cross the ocean, which was kind of interesting to see. And then after I spent quite a bit of time in Ireland, me and my wife decided to get married, and then somehow I wound up here.
Well, obviously there's a route to the passage as well. But you mentioned obviously New York then. We do a sister program, New York Real Talk, where we talk with New York musicians and areas within that. And I think the general vibe I've had there is that on the one hand, they like to embrace technology. And obviously music has always embraced new forms of technology, right from the days when the pianoforte was a drastic shift in terms of things that we're doing that. But discernment seems to be a word that from what Neil was saying and yourself, and we'll come to Rita in a few seconds, that notion of enhancing the critical faculties so that our undergraduates and our graduates actually have the ability to actually tell what is appropriate from what is perhaps not so appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, discernment, it's interesting. I think sometimes students can feel a bit of despair when they see AI, when they see information, and they might take it to someone, and then you kind of really interrogate that source, and you go, well, is this as reliable as we could think? And I think a lot of students do feel, oh, no, am I prepared to do this? But then
why can't I just use Wikipedia?
Yeah. Well, but I find that that despair quickly transitions into, actually, I am prepared to do this, but I have to now do it more than ever, perhaps, as opposed to perhaps just relying on sources that you got from a library, which could be quite curated. So I think it's just switching from that, oh, the world is open to us and we have to really use these skills to, actually, I have these skills and I'm confident using them. And I think that switch from despair to, oh, actually, I'm prepared for this, it's nice to see in the students.
Rita, as a student, obviously connected with respect to Vice President, Student Union, and so on. Do you get a vibe from the student population, who are absolutely core and essential to the whole lesson? I mean, let's face it, without the students, University of Lincoln, I mean, it'd be fun for Neil and Ola and myself and Matthew to probably turn up one day, but it wouldn't have that same vibe, really. I mean, the students are critical to the whole package. From what's been said, are you excited by this world of chatbots and ChatGPTs and artificial intelligences and algorithms and so on, or is it a case of, I don't know?
Being honest, because this is something that we've currently had with different students at several points in terms of the usage of this, you know, AI. Is it a positive innovation? Yes, it is. But it's now the adaptiveness that students tend to know. How do they adapt to using that? How well are they now relying on those things to use them in terms of learning, which then now becomes the issue in how much a student will go out there in terms of researching and working on stuff rather than just going looking out for the easier way. So is it a good thing at this point in time? Is it something that students will use? Probably, yeah. But if it's something that they know how to use it well, because now that's where the issue now comes in, is how well do you use it? Do you use it in a positive light, or do you use it as a way to cut out, you know, just like a shortcut to get in like a better education experience? So that's where that question is in terms of for a student.
A 3-year degree in 3 minutes, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, Neil, listening to that, and as somebody who has that engineering background, as we say, things are changing inevitably. But also at the same time, we are approaching the next journey to the moon. Artemis 2 has announced its crew. That's 50 years after we last set foot on the whole thing. There are lots of positive spin-offs there. Do you think sometimes you need to balance the optimistic view that it's all going to be digital paradise with the more realistic view that, as you said, maybe in 2027 things won't be as different as they first appear, but, you know, 2047 may be a different line entirely?
Yeah, it's that balance of optimism and pessimism. I think when I first started my academic journey, the feel was that computers were just... I had one of the first email systems when as a PhD student, and it was felt that computers were going to change the way we all worked. It was going to take many jobs
Just
away.
Just putting that cassette into the actual machine and hearing... It brings back chills, even now.
It does. And the view was that... life is going to change, we'd all have lots more leisure time. And of course what's happened is we've adapted, we've created things that, you know, didn't exist when I was doing iPhones and the apps on there and the way that students could communicate with each other and we all communicate with each other. Those things were not on the horizon when I started my PhD. So crystal balls are difficult things they're usually very cloudy. Things will change. It's how fast they'll change and whether our lives will be better at the end of it. But we're full of intelligent people at the university and adaptive people. And I think that's what we've got to keep teaching our next generation, is adapt as the world changes. Don't expect the world to stay the same.
Yeah, absolutely. But don't rip it up and start all over again. I'm sorry, I'm leading into your first piece of music. Neil, would you like to explain? Edwin Collins, of course, I think was lead singer with this particular band, who only had the one hit back in the day in the 1980s. So is this your student life coming out in force here?
Well spotted. I don't look that old, do I?
No, I was shocked, you know, frankly.
But yes, this is Rip It Up by Orange Juice. And as you're right, they didn't have many hits. I think this is the only one that got into the top 20. The reason I've chosen it is because it's the link between Leeds and Glasgow. The Leeds link isn't quite so obvious, but left school, went to university, came across someone who was a punk. I used to row with them. They said, let's go out for a night. Went to a club in Leeds. It wasn't a student club, it was more of a town club. And went to see Orange Juice. And this song, I didn't know at the time. I knew they were from Glasgow. I didn't know I'd then spend 25 years of my life in that city. So that's that link between
clearly
my first few weeks at university and quite a big portion of my life.
Yeah. It's anthemic. And obviously, from Rita's perspective, he may be reluctant to dance to Nigerian beat, but maybe Rip It Up. Who knows what moves could be thrown by our Vice Chancellor? And curiously, Matthew seems to have actually managed the dance routines to that. It's very impressive. It must be the New York innate sort of sense of theatre coming across.
Yeah, gotta give it a shot.
Yeah, absolutely. Leadership. Clearly, one of the roles of being a vice chancellor is that you are the de facto chief executive officer of the university. It's an important, significant position. You obviously had the role of deputy vice chancellor at the University of Glasgow. Neil, from that perspective, did you have a vision in mind when you first heard about Lincoln? What were the impressions that you got about Lincoln? Was it something you thought, I fancy that, or was it just a case of, I've had it with Scotland, I need to get back to England as soon as possible?
It wasn't the latter, although there are quite a few things going on in Scotland, particularly at the moment as well. But no, it wasn't a push. It was definitely a pull. And I think you've been at the university for almost its beginning, Alex, and you'll have seen it develop immensely over since 96. And the thing that really pulled me was the impact that this university has on the city. Every university, you can tell, it has an impact on its location, but there are very few, if any, universities where you can actually show it as much as Lincoln. I mean, where we're sitting now used to be brownfield train tracks.
Toxic waste dump.
Yeah, Neil. Toxic. I found the paper from when the Queen opened the Minerva building in 96, where it said we had ambitions to grow to a £50 million turnover and about 8,000 students. We've now got 15,000 students. Our turnover is 220-odd million. We're bringing about £450 million into the economy. About one in six of the people in the city are either a student, a member of staff, or indirectly employed because we're here. So if for some reason my leadership is so bad that the university stops running tomorrow, if you take the university out of the city, it would have a huge, huge impact. But it was the positive reasons of what the impact is having now and what we can do into the future that attracted me. And we've done a really good job in Lincoln. We're now also working quite a lot across Lincolnshire, from Holbeach to Grimsby, Scunthorpe, Mablethorpe. We're doing an awful lot for the county. We are vitally important to this city and this county.
And we're delighted, obviously, that you're with us, that you're able to actually share your own particular thoughts and approaches to the whole system. But we are also in the era of artificial intelligence, AI, and so on. And I think there was an old book that was once written by Isaac Asimov talking about a robot pope back in the days. So, is it something where you think that, because there's so much talk about the new technologies, the new lines that are actually within that, that somehow, although we've talked about discernment and other areas, that role of the Vice-Chancellor is... It's difficult to really pin down, or is it just a case of when you wake up in the morning, you have your breakfast, you say, right, that's it, today I'm going to do X, Y, or Z?
I don't think it's the latter, but it's certainly, I think, new technology will make it easier to maybe game what the future might be like. But you still need that leadership up front, because if you're using a system, I'm not fully aware of all the technologies, but if you're asking the same question, all universities are asking the same questions of the same system, you might get the same answer. And there's been some research done about the big consultancies working with companies, is that all the strategies then start to converge, and how do you be different? So leadership is very much a people skill. It's trying to get buy-in from the whole community of where we're trying to take the university. What's your role in getting us there? So when I wake up in the morning, it's how do we deploy our resources, both our people and our finances, to actually achieve what we want to do. And of course, what we want to do is to transform lives and communities, particularly in Lincoln and Lincolnshire.
Very much at the heart of the mission statement. Let's turn to our Vice President, International, Rita. Listening to Neil there, is that something which, from the students' perspective, you also think, yeah, that regionality, that approach of transformation, that engagement with the community and so on, exactly what Siren Radio effectively was set up to establish and to various degrees succeeds. What's your take on that?
I do agree with things are mentioned by Neil, because in the whole heart of, as we mentioned earlier on, of what Lincoln is the students themselves, and that's where we're raising and we're training and we're forming students who are going to move on from this locality into the different areas and walks of life to become leaders in their different segments, in their different industries. And where the student union comes into places, we create that platform in terms of where we're helping students harness that visionary skill in terms of leading, even from the smallest bits and places where they're coming from. I also, another thing again is within what we stand for and represent to us from the SU as well, is where we create that room where it's easy for everyone to feel welcome in that point where they are, and as well as use what we have, use the data that we get from students, use what the students are saying, and then in that, in turn, we use that to see how well we best support students and feedback into the university, just to promote and integrate that one community, as Neil has mentioned. Recently, we had like a strategy that we had to collate, data from students. What are our students actually saying? Not thinking of what do we think is best to lead for the students, but what exactly do they want? How do we feedback with that, what we got, that data, and how do we integrate that into our leadership? How do we now represent them objectively rightly and putting their interest into it, and not just the interest of the student. How does that feedback into the university as a whole? Because if you take out the, if you take out the university, we're nothing. We can't exist on our own that way. So we are part of a bigger body, and that's where we have that connection in terms of working together, using that data, and better informed leading from a place that comes in the right decision making process, and not just putting just data into it, but there's more of the emotions into it as well. Because in as much as going to use the data in terms of AI, because it just gives you things on paper, but then again, in terms of how that leadership goes in from the top of, you know, our CEO in the SU, down to the list person you can never think of, I mean the student staff in that organization, there's a lot that comes in together with what we've gathered, and how best do we now transform that with, you know, with empathy, with different things to integrate our students, to get, make sure that experience is, you know, comes out great in terms of Lincoln and community as a whole.
Okay, and emphasis striking the microphone as well, which is all good.
I'm very
excited. We like the passion. That is very important.
Very happy about it.
Matthew, yeah. From the arts perspective, often regarded in some cases as being it's not a STEM subject. It's not science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and so on. Challenges that are based within that, endeavouring to quantify the qualitative. I mean, something which I've wrestled with many a year over the time from personal life and all the range of things. How do you actually assess that? What are your thoughts on what both Rita and indeed Neil have been sharing with us?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think AI for musicians, there's two kinds of musicians. They're either people who are very afraid of it, usually composers, because they say, oh, I don't have to write music anymore. And then there's performers who are also just not really that afraid of it, because I wish I could, but I can't, like, punch some things into the computer and then just have it make my fingers do the things
auto-tune.
I want it to be. Yeah. But, and it goes back to what we were saying about, like, regionality and just kind of the personal aspect of being in a room with someone listening to music. You can't fake that, but you can use AI to create better performers, and people are doing that, especially in music. People are using AI to kind of like make different technical exercises to make musicians' lives easier, and just so they can perform, you know, in slightly more efficient ways. I come from a kind of classical background, but that's like a kind of priority. You know, I don't want to spend so much time practicing. I want to perform. In the pop world, it's more like we don't really practice at all, and then we just make our music, and that's it.
I think that's a gross generalization.
Of course, I'm kidding. As someone who plays pop music,
exactly.
But you see where I'm going. Like, AI can kind of really help musicians prepare what they do, but as long as it's steered in the right way, where there's an emphasis on local and kind of like regional communities.
So
I don't think it will affect us.
Is it fair to say, Neil, then, that the human factor, the human element, and I'm leading in a sense to John Lennon, one of the finest human beings I think there ever was, and who sadly was assassinated, literally killed in my first year at university, and it's still, I remember where I was when basically John Lennon was killed, and so on. Is that something which we do need, and is it all fundamentally down to our imagination and how we work with people across the sector, whether it's arts, humanities, all of those areas?
I think that's true, particularly in a university. We are a creative organisation. Mm. Now maybe technologies will be able to take some of that creativity and help us with it, but it is that connection with the human, which I'm not sure computers are there yet in terms of that connection with the human being. And it is, as a university, yes, we'll change. Going back to our previous discussion, yes, things will change. They may change faster than we're expecting, but we have to have that connection to the people, and particularly the people that we educate, the people we employ. But it's also the impact we have with the people around us, and I don't think technology is going to necessarily replace all of that.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. Have you always been a John Lennon fan? Is it a case of, well, there was either only one Beatle, it was John Lennon, or is it a case of this was a tune that resonates with you?
It's a fantastic song, but you've taken my story away from me, because I can remember where I was when I heard, and it was my first year away from home. I was sort of struggling to settle into where I'd gone to.
Contemporaries. Had I only gone to Leeds as opposed to London, who knows what could have happened?
Who knows what would have happened? But it is that I say it's a great song, but it always anchors to me, unfortunately, to John Lennon's death, but also to where I was then, and the importance of the shaping of my life at that point.
above us only sky.
From Neil's perspective and mine, that's got a massive impact. But Rita, you listen to Imagine now, does it connect with yourself at all? Or do you think, oh, it's some sort of bloke from Liverpool?
Do I say something right now that would not? Okay, no, I don't connect to it.
No, that's understandable.
That's why it's not to say that we're pretty too young, but I do understand some of this.
As I frequently said, I wasn't born during the Second World War, but I still know it happened. It's a historical fact. But it's just my mind. Matthew, likewise, you know, what of the new generation, John Lennon, the impact the Beatles have had on music, surely incontrovertible.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I'm controversial and someone who has neutral opinions about them, like in terms of my ability to connect.
So you're not going to go Rolling Stones, basically.
No, but in terms of connection, but they're, I mean, yeah, you have to respect them. You can't say they are bad musicians. Oh. That's like empirically wrong.
Historically, how often do we find that if we look back over the Romantic era, we look back over the work of Sergei Rachmaninoff, we look at even Philip Glass, etc., and you know, great stuff comes across and you never quite connect on that basis. Yeah. Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, arguably the punk musician of his time, basically. Or at least that's Amadeus. Engineering, pure science, humanities. We've touched on this already, Neil, but in terms of that, we have, obviously within the University of Lincoln, excellent College of Arts, College of Sciences. The science has really developed an impact on that system. As an engineer yourself, do you feel as though that connectivity between the creativity, the art, I use the line science fiction, a passion of mine in terms of projecting ahead to the future, that those sort of things are important to have that vision? In the same way as visionary leadership is important, it's important to have that vision as a practicing scholar.
Yes, you have to have those connections between the subjects. And we are fortunate in Lincoln that we are a comprehensive university. We have a broad spectrum of subjects. I think the challenge to any leader of a university is how you get those subjects to talk to each other, because you have to organise university somehow into schools or departments or faculties, colleges. And of course, we have a particular model here. And the interesting thing is always what happens on the boundaries. It's how do you stop things falling through those gaps? So going back to our strategy of transforming lives and communities, some of the issues that we have let's take health across the county. You cannot solve that problem by an engineer coming up with a new medical device or a doctor coming up with a new drug. Of course they help, but you've also got to connect with the social aspects, the social sciences of adopting new technology. You've got to connect with culture, because culture is also great in terms of health and well-being. So unless you've got that holistic view of trying to interface with a system, you're not going to succeed. So we are very lucky to have a wide range of scholars that should interact with each other. And our campus is designed, is a relatively compact campus, so that we shouldn't really have any excuses for not talking to each other. It's just those cultural boundaries that can exist, and I guess my job is to try and break them down every time I get an opportunity.
Which is exactly what Cultural Connections is all about, really. So here we are. Rita, back to yourself again. Let's talk a little bit about your own cultural backdrop from that perspective, because you said you'd worked in radio, you'd done radio when you were in Nigeria, you'd worked on that system, yeah. etc. How do you think that compares or relates to sort of thing we've been talking about in terms of that global sphere? I mean, one of the things that I've certainly noticed over the years has changed remarkably, and for the better, is we've certainly become a much more cosmopolitan university in terms of the universality of students and connections from Romania, from Nigeria, from China, from all sorts of areas. And that really, you know, without going down a diversity is wonderful line, but it is such an important factor in the development. What are your thoughts in that area?
So if I move back to what you started earlier in terms of my experience back at home and then coming down here, it's obviously, I mean, it's not as similar to what I had back in Nigeria, but coming here, then assimilating to the cultural differences as well, is something that it's almost like being a quick shift, more like it. But in Lincoln as a whole, and from interacting with students, so interacting not with just students, because I was in business school, so interacting with students are not just in business school, in social sciences and engineering or in medical area, because of some of the things that we've done in terms of communal events that we do in the SU that brings everybody together. There's that sense of understanding of what goes on, where this other students are coming from, and then what you're meeting here in the UK and what actually now really happens here in the UK as well. It's quite different from where all of us we come from. Completely different. So, but you have some things that are a bit similar. But in terms of that shift, it's been quite drastic. But how do you feel when you come in here and then finding that, how would I put it, they need to catch up and they need to get on board? It's almost like 0 to 100. But is that connection, as Neil mentioned, when you find a way that you cut across, how do you get the engineers and how do you get those from social sciences to all come together in some sort of...
We love our silos.
Exactly.
We like our silos. We like to stay in our area. Yeah. This is our zone.
So in as much as you have the academic way of where it's just restrictive, you have to find a platform where everybody comes together and putting ideas on how do we make this community one that brings everybody together and feels like everybody, as you mentioned, not in sense of diversity, but in one's inclusion as well, and cultural connections as well. So for us from the SU, those are where we, especially in my role, what I do is I do things that brings in almost all the students from those regions. And so, you know what, even if you're in the sciences and you're from Greece, you're coming to meet someone who is from the UK and they're studying architecture, and you're coming to make that connection with people there.
Back in the 1930s, R. Buckminster Fuller coined the term synergy. Two disparate ideas, put them together, you get a third one emerging as a matter of course.
I mean, and in that turn, that's how best you know how well you want to support students on campus. That's how best you understand their views and what they need and what is very important in terms of their learning, in terms of their integration, in terms of coming here. So that's how you know, and that's where you hear those kind of things, and that's where you best serve the purpose of the students rather than just a business as a whole.
We're moving up to, I think, the 90s, actually, indeed the noughties, arguably, with respect to a Croatian singer-songwriter who worked extensively with Mike Batt, known for his Wombles, and others in a whole range of things. This is Katie Melua, who's obviously been getting her abacus out for this next little number in terms of how did she find out how many bicycles there were in Beijing. But why have you gone for this particular piece, Neil?
Again, it's another moment in my life, and again, you've taken a little bit of my story away with Mike Batt.
It's the telepathy.
I was born in Wimbledon, and Near Wimbledon, and so Mike Batten, as you pointed out, famously the Womble. I didn't think I should put a Wombles.
Replace Jerusalem as the actual graduation theme, possibly. That's my thought for the day.
Maybe we could do that. But this is another moment in my life. I was on holiday in 2006 in Italy, and my wife was taken seriously ill, and I spent a lot of time in the waiting room waiting for things to happen. And this was played almost continually on the television. It's a great song. It's full of numbers, which maybe preach to my scientific background, but also, of course, it's about love, and that's why this one is important to me.
On Siren Radio, and we have Professor Neil Juster, we have Arita Ugi, and Matthew Mazanek. Not, of course, to be confused with Manzanek, who was a singer with the Doors, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Organ player.
Right. Okay, good. Matthew, we'll come to you first this particular time. An aspect of Lincoln that you found unusual, bizarre, charming, totally incomprehensible. After all, you know, as Oscar Wilde once said, America, England, you know, two countries separated by a common language.
Yeah.
How has your experience been as part of the Lincoln time?
I mean, I think the University of Lincoln just feels so much more in the real world than any university I've ever kind of dealt with. And that's probably speaking to the conservatory kind of system that I grew up in. Or that I was kind of trained in, because it's so much about your own personal development, and you close the practice room door and you do your recitals and that's it. Whereas here, I just loved the, like, even in the music program, the focus on industry connection, the kind of focus on really getting out there and actually being a kind of, I want to say worldly, but a local musician, someone who can actually, who is part of the real world and isn't just up on a stage somewhere, which is really interesting. It's really embedded in the course, which I really love.
That's charming. Any bizarre things you'd like to share with us, or is it just a case that there are too many? We'd be here for another series.
I mean, the hill is very bizarre. Yeah,
it's called Steep Hill because it is.
Yeah.
It's quite literal. Okay. I remember well your inaugural lecture, Neil, that was all about the history of education, and you talked about, in a sense, we're almost coming full circle, because when universities were set up, and the first one, of course, being set up in Italy, a fun fact that, again, I thought, yes, this is good, this is going to be a good session. Have you found anything that's been, a lad from Leeds, originally from Wimbledon, up to Leeds, of course, Glasgow, and now here we are. Presumably, you are at least an honorary yellow belly.
Yep.
From that particular perspective, anything which you just thought, how unusual?
Yes, the flatness. my house in Scotland, which I lived for 25 years, just outside to the west of Glasgow, is literally half a mile the other side of the Highland Boundary Fault. I try and keep slightly fit by being on a bike, and you can't go 10 meters from my back door without hitting a hill. Bit different here in Lincoln.
Yeah, there's only one really.
So to me it is that flatness, and for cycling into a wind across some of the lanes just outside Lincoln, it can be quite as hard work going up a hill.
Neil, you should have stunt cyclists to actually deal with those kind of things, because when Rita gets you doing the pop videos as well, we need to work on this sort of process.
I look forward to that.
It happened. We could always adopt the Great Uncle Bulgaria approach to life in the Wombles. Okay, Rita, again, will it be a case of where do I start with these crazy things?
For me, it's cool because it's a completely different thing, because I'm coming from a different continent, and then my first time also coming to the UK. If it's bizarre, which is weird, but I like it, but some students don't think it's quite interesting. I love the idea that there's a train track in between the uni.
Yeah, I think we're the only university in the world, actually, that actually has a train track going slap bang through the middle of it.
That's one thing, in terms of just the geography of it. I like that. I like that there is that in the middle of the... I don't get to see trains every time, where I'm coming from. And I've never seen it. Like, I've visited different cities and in the UK, but that's something that is like... is always for me, like, that's one cool part about Lincoln, the campus itself. Mm. Nice. In terms of the city, if I have to go there, it's why do they close their store?
You're not unique in terms of saying that. I'm sorry.
It's
Wednesday afternoon. We're closed.
It was very bizarre for me the first time when I came here. I just came here, and then you're like, I can't quickly go anywhere because it's all shut by that time. Mm. So that's what it took a lot of getting used to. But at first, when I came in, it was very bizarre to me because...
One of the challenges, of course, that I know Mary Stuart regularly used to battle through was the transport infrastructure, Neil. I mean, is that something which you still find is a challenge insofar as, people now know a little bit more, thanks to the excellent work that's being done about where Lincoln actually is, but is there still that sense of, where exactly are you again?
Yeah, I think it's that, where are you? There aren't many big roads that come into Lincoln, and yes, the train track does come through, but there aren't that many direct trains to London, but those direct trains have made a big difference. Mm. But of course, going out wider in the county, the transport links aren't great. We have a campus down in Holbeach and go down there occasionally, and you just have to learn patience that when you see a tractor, you sit behind it.
Well, it's more mindfulness in transport.
Yeah, it is. But fast rail links just don't exist across the county.
Mm. I think in the 1960s there was an original plan to extend the dual carriageway that was part of the Humber Bridge all the way down to Lincoln, but obviously that's not going to happen in the 21st century, or not in the foreseeable future, shall we say.
I don't think so.
No. Astonishingly, that's brought us to the end of Volume 8 of Cultural Connections, but the more discerning listener, and let's hope they all are, will have actually appreciated that we've had lots of music from Professor Neil Juster, Rank has its privileges, obviously, and of course Vice President International, Rita Ugi, but as yet nothing from yourself. Well, that is now going to be put to rights, Matthew, because you're going to see us out with this little production, the 2020 remastering of Pliocene. Would you like to just share with us why and what it's about and so on?
Yeah, it kind of matches with the theme. Harumi Hosono was originally in a band called Yellow Magic Orchestra with sadly died. Ryuichi Sakamoto was one of his bandmates who just died a few weeks ago. And he kind of...
Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
And he kind of fell... Harumi Hosono kind of fell to the wayside a little bit, was a little bit more obscure. And this one strange YouTube video cropped up a few years ago, and a few articles were written about he has this, like, this renaissance. And that's purely just because of YouTube AI algorithm, which... put his music to the forefront, and now, you know,
And now really he's reached the ultimate accolade of actually being featured as the final track on a Cultural Connections program. Dr. Matthew Mazanek, Rita Ugi, and Professor Neil Juster, huge thanks indeed. Take care and keep on keeping on.
Thank you.
like. Oh.